It all began in Belfast, Ireland, at the Harlan and Wolff shipyard. 3,000 men would work 16-hour days, 6 days a week, for more than 2 years. They were building a monster, the largest moving man-made object ever. This monster was a ship. It was a delight for the men building her, but some found the ship's size alarming, as it could have been seen for miles away, eclipsing the town and the people that lived there. The fate of this ship, even today, 100 years later, still fascinates the world. Her name is Titanic, and these are her untold stories. Today, in part two of Titanic's Untold Stories, we'll take a closer look at the aftermath of the sinking of Titanic with world-renowned shipwreck diver John Chatterton, who tells us that the Titanic sinking had a greater effect on people all over the world.
When it sank, you know, it had a very serious effect on modern civilization. Questions like, where are we going? How much is enough? How big is too big? And all these things kind of came out of the sinking of Titanic.
But just days after the sinking, people were walking around in disbelief.
People were completely shocked that this could possibly happen. How could this possibly happen?
From the moment that survivors from the ship arrived in New York City, we started looking for answers. We haven't stopped since.
The United States, they had a congressional inquiry. They had the Mercy inquiry in the UK. Just to try and give people something in way of an answer.
One piece of the puzzle that we know is that lookout Frederick Fleet was 24 years old when he was on duty the night of April 14th, 1912. And according to him, he had no binoculars with him that night because they were locked away and the officer that had the key to the lock had gone to bed. Frederick also said something else.
We know that the lookouts tried to contact the bridge and the bridge did not immediately respond.
The reason we must believe Frederick's story is simple.
The people who were on watch at the time did not survive, so we don't have complete answers to everything.
For the answers investigators do have, they're unsure of how clear some of the facts from the survivors are.
And when we look at the eyewitness testimonies, they're having inquiries literally days after the sinking. People are giving testimony.
The problem with giving testimony days after you've watched thousands of people die right before your eyes is just that.
A lot of these people are still in shock. We have a broad spectrum of variation in testimony. And of course, from knowledgeable people, from crew, we have that were caught lying. Their emotional state. This is the disaster of a century. Do I want to be responsible for that? Your human response is, I didn't do anything wrong.
No one was blaming survivors for anything that happened on board that night. Instead, they were trying to comfort them.
You've only got roughly 750 survivors. There is certainly going to be an element of survival guilt. You know, some of these people are still in shock. They're not really sure themselves what happened. That's the kind of testimony that modern-day researchers have to work with.
Pieces from that night are still trying to be put together, even today, 100 years later. But one thing is clear. It was not just a night of death, destruction, and pain.
It was an evening of heroism. And then, of course, you have Bruce Ismay getting into a lifeboat. You know, not his finest moment.
Bruce Ismay was on board the Titanic as a passenger. However, his role on the ship was much greater than that. He was the president of the White Star Line, and because he jumped into a lifeboat, he was branded a coward by the media and died alone in 1937. Tomorrow, we'll go down to the wreck of Titanic and take a closer look into the future of the once great ship on Titanic's Untold Stories. I'm Alan Bailey for AudioEightBall.com.